Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Alice Bell, may I ask why you have developed an interest in Everton Football Club?
It's a variety of reasons. a very good friend of mine is a big Everton fan. Mm. And also I follow a couple of other people who are fans of Everton, and they were tweeting about this points deduction stuff. Yeah. And I got interested in that because of my natural thirst to crush injustice, I guess. or just because I like doomed underdogs who were being unfairly treated, I guess. And so now I am genuinely quite invested in Everton, but I've become invested in Everton at the worst possible time in Everton's history.
I mean, it was worse earlier in the season when their points deduction was twice as bad.
Well, that's true, but I don't reckon that we're going to win the Premier League, James. To this season 3 episode 10 of the Electronic Wireless Show podcast, Rob Pepper Sugar's PC Gaming podcast, and the only podcast you need. A special welcome to any Everton fans listening. My name is Alice Bell, and I'm joined this week by Jams Archer. Hello, Jams.
Hello.
What football team do you support, James?
I technically support Manchester United, only...
What do you mean technically?
Well, it's I do, but also, like... they make me miserable, and I hate them.
Yeah,
I do sometimes wish I could, like, delete the part of my brain that became interested in football sometime in 2018. Because it's mainly brought me, yeah, ruin.
Why did you pick Manchester United?
I liked them, I liked them when I was a kid.
Oh, okay.
And at the time, I guess it was also like not that similar to the Everton situation, but when I liked them, they were like still in the doldrums, which I guess they are now. But there was a bit of like optimism around them, so there was this kind of like I don't want to use like underdog to describe like a £1 billion football club, but there was this sense of like, you know, fallen giants. Like trying to get back on the up, and that was like an interesting narrative to me. So I like that, and now it's just kind of like the fallen giant might actually be permanently crippled.
Well, I mean, as has been exposed by like two actors from Hollywood, it's all money, isn't it? It doesn't seem very fair, but you know,
Manchester United have money. They have loads of money. They just spend it like.
Oh, well.
Like, silly people.
What's the ish,
that's a worse word there.
You could pick someone else, James. You just pick a different
team. I do try to follow along Swindon, my hometown team.
Oh, they're my hometown team.
Yeah, same.
Yeah,
You're a Robins fan, Alice?
Sure.
Yeah.
I proposed to Graham once that he should write a murder mystery book where a serial killer is going around killing people in ways that relate to like the nicknames of football teams. So like the first couple, nobody knows what's going on because it's like someone gets shot and then someone gets like, you know, bludgeoned with a bunch of hammers. And then like, yeah, they find a body where someone's been like drowned in toffee and they're like, my God.
It's a Premier League killer.
Exactly. Although why, I have no motivation as to why anyone would be doing this. You know, I'm an ideas woman.
Not kind of, what kind of diseased mind?
Exactly. But that's what you do, like, you know, it's like a Criminal Minds. Just be like, they're crazy.
There's I think, currently out of work football manager called Steve Bruce, who in the 90s wrote a series of murder mystery novels starring a crime-detecting football manager.
What? How? What? That doesn't seem like a great use of a manager's time. Was his team doing well still?
No.
No, right, yeah.
Oh, sorry. Like he's not doing well, I don't think. I think he's between.
Oh, right, okay.
I think
but
he's
in his
he's
fictional
between,
books.
I haven't read them, to be honest, Alice. They are likely garbage.
Oh dear. Well, do you know what else is a crime?
What's
I
that?
I don't know where I'm going with this. Ernest Cline's books.
Do you just sit in a kind of like permanent state of seething about Ernest Cline?
Kind of. Like it's always in the background that whenever anyone mentions him, I'm sort of awoken like a sleeper agent, you know, and go on like a little rant. This isn't really the main topic. We'll say that there are two topics today, right? First, I just want to make fun of Ernest Cline for a bit. And then second, we got a lovely email. I'll open it up here from Pete. Pete obligingly emailed in saying my book is great after I asked people to last time. You said Nate's aren't bad either. If you haven't had the topic already, how about games you weren't allowed to play as a kid that weren't disappointing when you could as an adult? Which is an interesting one to talk about. But in the news this week, I also wanted to talk about the fact that Ernest Cline. Have you read Ready Player One, James?
No, and I'm unlikely to.
Oh, good.
No, really?
But I sell it.
Knowing what
well.
I do.
So, Ernest Cline wrote Ready Player One and Ready Player Two, and then a book called Armada, which is basically the same book again, as I understand it. I have read Ready Player One because everyone recommended it to me because I like books and nerd shit, and I'm always disappointed. I've said this before, people are allowed to like what they like. I make no moral judgment of you for things that you like, unless you like Ready Player One. And then I think you are ontologically evil. You will not see the light of heaven. I think they're terrible books. I won't go into it here. But Ready Player One's writer, Ernest Cline, has founded a studio called Readyverse Studios, who in partnership with, they're like a publishing studio, I guess, and in partnership with a developer called Walker Labs, they're starting something called the Readyverse, which is some sort of Web3 enabled metaverse. I find it very funny that they're doing this about 4 months after kind of the metaverse and NFTs and digital ownership kind of collapsed. But this is what they're doing, and the flagship experience of this is a game called Open, which is.
But the E is backwards, so it looks like a free.
Opthrin.
Opthrin.
It's some sort of battle royale multiplayer, like Fortnite meets Fall Guys, I guess, thing, but. The USP, I guess, is that it's an immersive multiverse filled with nostalgia-infused biomes featuring characters and cultural legends across iconic franchises. I believe it's coming to early access this year, might be next year, but Readyverse previously said they were launching in 2024. Now, currently, the list of confirmed IP that they would commit to in the press release is the DeLorean car, which obviously Ernest Cline loves. Ready Player One and Reebok.
Reebok shoes.
I mean, I get that, yeah, like, that's how it's
spelled.
Make,
you can't make a biome out of shoes.
Maybe it's one really big shoe. Maybe everything in it is a shoe. Like, all the leaves on the trees are little shoes.
I don't... And, Ready Player One just isn't... That's not, like, its own franchise. That's just a list of other franchises.
Right? Well, I mean, there's a character that looks like Percival. Is that his name? From the books. But, like, yeah, the only thing I could think is that maybe the Ready Player One IP contains other IP nesting inside it, but to the extent that it is a thing, I assume it's just the characters from Ready Player One. It's just not a lot.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to see the Iron Giant in this, maybe.
No, indeed. So, I do find this very funny. Firstly, because this is happening, as I said, like, the... It cites as a reason for, like, doing a metaverse being good a 2022 report from Citi, as in Citibank, saying that the metaverse market has the potential to hit $13 trillion in value by 2030. It's got a long way to go, I would say.
Are they aware of what's happened to the metaverse since 2020?
It's got 6 years to hit $13 trillion. So yeah, that report's from March 2022, and it says, you know, the spike in interest in the metaverse was from NFTs, but as we all know now, All Your Apes crashed in September. So I would imagine that $13 trillion has been revised down quite substantially. I've also linked to Dan Olsen's video essay on the metaverse. This is an incredibly foolhardy and kind of artistically empty and vacuous proposition. I think it's very funny. I would now, James, like to round off this segment, which is just me ranting about Ernest Cline, by giving you a dramatic reading today.
Oh, okay. So this is titled This Incredible Poem by Ready Player One author Ernest Cline. Read it, it's worth it, in parenthesis. Oh, I know the actual title of the poem is Nerd Porn Auteur.
Yeah, so this is preserved on Reddit because he has excised this from the internet. It's a few years old, in fairness to him. He might be less embarrassing now. I doubt it.
Okay. So, Nerd Porn Auteur by Ernest Cline. I've noticed that there don't seem to be any porno movies that are made for guys like me. All the porn I've come across was targeted at beer-swilling, sports bar-dwelling alpha males, men who like their women stupid and submissive, men who can only get it up for monosyllabic, cock-hungry nymphos with gargantuan breasts and a three-word vocabulary. Adult films are populated with these collagen-injected, liposuctioned women, many of whom have resorted to surgery and self-mutilation in an attempt to look the way they have been told to look. They aren't real women, they're objects. And these women and these movies aren't erotic, they're pathetic. These vacuum-headed fuck bunnies don't turn me on. They disgust me. And it's not that I'm against pornography. I mean, I'm a guy, and guys need porn. Fact. Like a preacher needs pain, like a needle needs a vein, guys need porn. But I don't want to watch this misogynist he-man-woman-hater porn. I want porno movies that are made with guys like me in mind. Guys who know that the sexiest thing in the world is a woman who is smarter than you are. You can have the whole cheerleading squad. I want the girl in the tweed skirt and the horn-rimmed glasses. Betty Finabowski, the valedictorian. Oh yes. First I want to copy her trig homework, and then I want to make mad, passionate love to her for hours and hours until she reluctantly asks if we can stop because she doesn't want to miss Battlestar Galactica. Summer come loud, baby! That's what I call erotic. But do you ever see that kind of woman in a contemporary adult film? No. Which is why I'm going to start writing and directing geek porno. I shall be the quintessential nerd porn auteur. And the women in my porno movies will be the kind that drive nerds like me mad with desire. I'm talking about the girls that used to fuck up the grading curve. The girls in the Latin Club and the National Honor Society. Chicks with weird clothes, braces, four eyes, and 4.0 GPAs. Brainy, articulate bookworms with Mensa cards in their purses and chips on their shoulders. My porn starlets will come in all shapes and sizes. My porn starlets will be too busy working on their PhD to go to the gym. In my kind of porno movies, the girls wouldn't even have to get naked. They just take the guys down to the rec room and beat them repeatedly at chess, and then talk to them for hours about Heisenberg's uncertainty principle, or the underlying social metaphors in the Aliens movies. Buy stock in some hand cream companies, because there's about to be a major shortage.
I'm going to stop you because it's so long.
I'm so close to the end. It's what Ernest Cline said. And I'm not just talking about straight porn. Oh, no. There should be fuck films for my nerd brethren of all sexual orientations. Gay Nord porn flicks with titles like Dungeons and Drag Queens. This idea is a fucking goldmine. I'm going to make millions. Because this country is full of database programmers and electronic engineers, and they aren't getting the loving they so desperately need. And you can help. If you're an intelligent woman who's interested in breaking into the adult film industry, and you can tell me the name of Luke Skywalker's home planet, then you are hired. It doesn't matter if you think you're overweight or unattractive. It doesn't matter if you don't think you're beautiful. You are beautiful, and I will make you a star. I want to quit this podcast.
I'm sorry. That was a form of abuse. It's not
a poem. It's a manifesto.
It is.
Written Maybe by we... someone who you would normally then go and shoot themselves.
It's a manifesto, and he's pressed enter at random points to like start a new line. And it's awful, and I love it so much. It's so terrible. I'm a feminist. The women in porn films disgust me.
Oh no.
I know. Yeah, that was just for anyone who, in case they hadn't been exposed to nerd porn or to it's terrible. It is, as I said, it's quite old now, and he doesn't ever talk about it, but
really,
yeah, I love it. It's strange because I hate him so much, I've accidentally become like extremely knowledgeable about it.
You need to know everything about him so you can you can rinse him more thoroughly and accurately.
And I've said this before, people will say it's jealousy. It is jealousy. He's extremely rich and has done nothing of value. And I wish I
could. That is the dream.
That is the dream. Exactly. Let's talk about what the actual topic was supposed to be, which is games that you... Were there games that you weren't allowed to play as a kid, James?
I'm honestly struggling to think, because it wasn't that I was allowed to play whatever, but I was probably like so meek about challenging the concept of things I wasn't allowed to, that I never really tried to push out. Like I never tried to play something like Grand Theft Auto behind my parents' back or something.
Yeah.
That being said, that's probably a decent example, because I never was allowed to play Grand Theft Auto, and as an LRT, I don't really care for Grand Theft Auto.
Well,
so
what did Grand Theft Auto have a mystique when you were younger?
I mean, to a degree, because it was kind of held up as this amazing, and I suppose still is, as this amazing, you know, like pinnacle of the medium. But I don't know, I could live without it, I think.
Unlike porn, which you as a man need.
I need to copy people's trick homework.
Yeah.
If I'm honest, like, I mainly played kid games when I was a kid. And I guess the occasional like family, like more family friendly, but not necessarily kid stuff. So. Mm. Yeah, I'm trying to think. What else have I ever been told? No, I don't think so. Because I was so scared of being like, can I try this, Mum? Because I knew she'd say no.
I think you were probably part of the same generation as well, whose parents sort of didn't understand video games as well. So my parents sort of didn't get the age rating thing really. I kind of didn't quite understand. And I worked actually in a game station before they closed down, RIP, years ago. And people would still come in and like the like fucking 8-year-old sons would be like, Mum, I want Grand Theft Auto. And then I'd be the demon woman who like looked this child in the eye and then was like, so it's got, you know, kind of sex and hookers and then you can attack the hooker and get your money back and
and then the
mothers would be shocked and appalled. And it was a weird thing where like they saw the 18 rating on there, but they kind of didn't compute, like, until I said it's like films, so if you would let your son see an 18 movie, go fill your boots, you know.
Yeah,
is what I would say. Because we never got checked as well. They were supposed to do secret shoppers where, like, you know, they would check if we were loudly like, Madam, I cannot sell you Grand Theft Auto because I suspect you will give it to your son. But we never did. But my parents were a little bit the same. They sort of didn't quite understand. So I wasn't allowed to watch, like, Kevin Smith movies, but I was sort of allowed to play, you know, Call of Duty.
Okay.
That kind of stuff. But then I don't know, my parents really like the long, you know, The Longest Day and whatever and all those fucking war movies, so maybe they thought Call of Duty was good clean fun. but Grand Theft Auto was one that I do remember, I think, because it broke through to the mainstream, them sort of being a bit iffy about. But I do like Grand Theft Auto in the present day, not to the extent that I play like online, but I think like GTA 5 is banger kind of thing. I try to think if there are other ones that sort of weren't allowed. Did you ever play Giant Citizen Kabuto?
No.
Oh, that was it's like a weird kind of it's about these sort of like marines that are sort of intentional piss takes of like Master Chief, they look like. It came out in like 2000, I think, and it's a, like, you play, there are three basically single player modes in that there are three sort of humanoid people that you can play as.
Yeah.
So you could play as either the kind of space marine jetpack guys, the sea reapers who are like frog people led by a sexy lady, and then the Citizen Kabuto, which is a big, like, kind of Godzilla-esque monster.
Right.
And it's sort of like, what do you call it? Like almost like an RTS game, because you, like, make a base and then you, like, have a mission and you have like units that you select and stuff, if I remember rightly. God, it's so old. But I mean, we desperately wanted that and weren't allowed to have it. So I don't know, I should go back and play it again, because I did play like a years ago when I was like 18, 19. I played it. I should see if it's good again. But that was one. But yeah, also okay. Like, lived in the middle of nowhere as well, so like could not buy games without my parents knowing.
I see.
You know.
Yeah, I remember mostly having to play games like on the living room TV, so there was no way of hiding.
Yeah, it like, so we had like, you know, the Harry Potter PlayStation games with like Busted Hagrid and
I had those.
Yeah, and we had something called Primal, which I'm pretty sure had voice actors from like Babylon 5 in it, which was about a woman who worked in a bar and was like some sort of like chosen one who went to another. But that was pretty good, actually. Primal was good. I'm going to play Primal again. You went around four, like, themed different worlds. There was, like, a vampire world, a kind of dog monster world.
Yeah.
A fireplace and a water zone. And had to set them all right again. And you could turn into a sort of creature from the area. So in the sea place, you could turn into, like, a swimming fish person.
That's neat.
Pretty good. Yeah. Yeah. It was one of those good, like, you know, like, 7.5 out of 10 standalone adventures that you don't get anymore. Like,
yeah.
Like, we were talking about movies on a call the other day and talking about how, like, times has changed and stuff. And, like, and I basically made the point that if you watch Wild Wild West today, it seems like a pretty good movie. Which I stand by.
I haven't seen it.
Oh, James, you must. It's got a big robot spider in it.
Don't all the that developers' films have big robot spiders? Or was it the writer of the film? I remember a member of that film's personnel has a tendency to put big robot spiders in all their films. I can't remember who it is.
It's the producer, I believe.
Oh, the producer, okay.
Because he was working on the Superman film that was going to have Nicolas Cage in it. And this isn't anything to do with video games. And that Kevin Smith wrote a script draft for. And Kevin Smith went to the producer's house and, like, read the script out and stuff. Hmm. And the producer was trying to envision how it would be. And he asked Kevin Smith to put a spider in there, a giant spider, because they're the fiercest killers in the animal kingdom. and then Kevin Smith went to see Wild Wild West, like, you know, years later, and was like, motherfucker.
Do you think I feel like I'm being a massive old man when I say this, but do you feel like parents these days are generally less fussed about letting kids play, like, more grown-up games? Because if you think... Because two of, like, the games I most associate with being played by children are Fortnite, which, you know, has approximations of actual real-life guns in it. And Poppy Playtime, which is like a horror game.
Yeah.
So
I think maybe in the same way that, like, our parents and their parents got beaten at school and thought it never did them any harm, maybe our generation have played video games and are like, never did me any harm. But also, like, the danger, I think, is playing online for kids as well, because you can hear awful shit. And also, Fortnite Festival, is it? It's the Fortnite portal where you basically play Rock Band that they launched a couple of years ago.
Oh, yeah, that.
It's got Down With The Sickness by Disturbed in it now. And I'm sure, James, you're familiar with the bridge in Down With The Sickness, where he basically sort of pantomimes child abuse from his mum. You know, the bit where he's like, yeah, can't do it again, mommy! that's in it. it's lightly kind of censored, but, like, that is, like, if you're doing the singing part, that is tracked. Fortnite.
Like a very confused 8-year-old. Being exactly. Like, no, mommy, happening? Don't hit me. Why did you have to hit me like that, mommy?
So, yeah, I think maybe, like, parents of, like, millennial parents are more blasé about it, maybe. And then there's this is getting very kind of internet thing, but there's people call it puriteens, where some members, like, most of Gen Z, most Zoomers are, like, right on and cool. But some Zoomers have gone a little bit too far towards the idea of, like, sex bad. But I don't know to what extent this is really a thing. I've just seen people talking about it. And, like, the idea that, like, some themes are problematic to the extent that you should not discuss them at all, even if you're discussing them in a way that is theme bad, like in your art and stuff like that. But so maybe it's just like,
is that a new thing, or is that not just a rebranding of like traditional conservative thought?
Yeah, well, I think that's kind of what it is. Like, we all sort of react against how we were parented, I guess, generationally. And so if you get parents who are kind of a bit more loosey-goosey, maybe you're a bit more uptight. I don't know. I this is all, please don't at me. I'm just sort of freewheeling. Because my mum is a bit uptight, and so I'm a bit more like, yeah, fuck it. Because my grandmother was like a good time gal who drank red wine and smoked and like kind of wasn't really fussed about homework and stuff, you know.
Okay.
So then my mum became like anxious, and then I am also anxious, but like in different ways. That's, you know, but I'm not going to write a fucking New York Times op-ed about how that's true of the entire nation. I'm just, you know, I'm spitballing here. What has this got to do with video games, James?
I don't know. This has been like the most games-like podcast I think we've done.
Ironic, because they isn't here.
Yeah.
Do you think like games as a whole are maybe a bit too blasé about, you know, shooty bangs and violence, and we just sort of, you know, because I don't really... When I'm playing a shooter, I'm obviously not like, my God, the violence.
Yeah, I don't think that's really changed much at all, really. I mean, you can find like bloodless shooters going back you know, decades.
True, but I do think we don't have enough discussions about how like this is funneling money to like the actual arms industry.
That's also true.
The way video games contribute to real life violence is not by making people play games more violent, but by funding the arms industry. But listen, that's beyond the scope of this podcast. We're just two people, James, who have done very little research and operate on an I reckon basis. So,
yep. Apparently had very middle of the road childhoods, which
I know. James, shall we talk about what we've been playing this week?
Yes, let's. So I've been on kind of first-person shooter preview duty this week.
You have, haven't you?
Yeah, so one I've played is a new game called Ascendant Infinity, which is a terrible name, and it initially appears to be a terrible game. It has this like really bad kind of 90s like ballsy attitude, bro, like tone to it. All the characters in it speak as if they're like doing Duke Nukem impressions, including one like voice you can have for your character, I think, is literally doing a Duke Nukem impression. So yeah, tonally I'm not into it. But as like a team-based like shooter, it's actually like quite interesting and like very, very kind of like thoughtfully put together. How it works is it's a bit like, so it's structured a bit like Capture the Flag, in that there are these essentially magic science orbs that you need to kind of collect and then take back to your base. What I find interesting about it is there's quite a lot to do outside of just shooting people and collecting these orbs. So there's like a kind of economy system where you can collect resources and then spend that to upgrade your guns or your shields.
Okay.
And there are they're called events, which are these like randomly assigned, I don't know how to describe it, like like variables where you can call in like an artillery strike, or the best one is there's like a giant chained up lizard, and and you can release a lizard, and one player on your team, there's teams of three, one player can like mind control the lizard, so they actually they play as it until someone kills it.
How big is the lizard?
It's maybe about 3 gorillas tall.
That's a great metric. Very good. I understand this lizard. Continue.
So yeah, and because it's like so much side stuff, it rarely feels like just meat grinderish, where all you're doing is like fighting, dying, rinse and repeating. You have a bit of, well, quite a lot of like choice, I guess, in how you actually approach a game, because you can like just go straight for the cause and then take them back. But if you do that, then you'll probably be like under geared almost, and you won't have you won't get any of the benefits that come with like exploring a bit, like making use of the shops and the events and all that. But then maybe you want to do that anyway because you're gonna get a straighter shot towards getting the cause, which is how you actually win the game. Or if like you have a really bad fight and you're doing like shit, you can actually take a moment, gather up some resources, and then that's how you get like back in the game by playing the loot economy a bit. I keep saying like it's a lot smarter than it looks, because
the same is true of me, James.
while it has this like this daft like 80s retro future tone, it does seem like very very considered and very thoughtful in how the game is set up and in terms of like the flexibility you have to kind of play it in different ways. So that's pretty good. I'm not like, can't wait to play more of this, but it's like, oh yeah, this is interesting. I can get on board with this.
Yeah, yeah. I do like the different ways to win kind of thing, because I am very bad at the standard way to winning, which is, you know, being good at shooting. So.
Yeah, I played with like one developer and one other press person. And we had a game where we were just like getting absolutely shat on.
Bad. You don't want that.
So yeah, literally what we did was just like play almost stealthy a bit, like run around, like gathering resources, finding like there's a randomly spawning key card which will let you into a vault which contains really good gear. And it's just being carried by like some random snail that a completely passive like NPC snail.
The layers in this game.
and you can kill him and get the keycard and get all this really good stuff.
Yeah.
So that's fun. But having said like there's still always like a degree of risk and reward to it. Which again like makes it interesting, because you think, wow, Going for the lizard will give me this massive advantage, but the act of like starting the brain upload to get the lizard, that creates like a massive alarm. Everyone on the map knows of someone who's going for the lizard, and then that attracts like everyone to you, and you have to, and it turns it into this like this defense mode where you have to defend your lizard, really, because if another team comes along and kills you, then they can just hijack the lizard, and then they get to be the lizard. And that's literally what happened to us. Like we got completely overwhelmed by three teams simultaneously attacking us at once, trying to get this bloody lizard. And then someone else got it, and then they were the lizard for like 10 or 15 minutes, just because no one was able to kill it.
I like the potential kind of metas that could spring up with this sort of game, and the language that it could, you know, people yelling like Liz.
I do like games with rich lexicons.
Yeah, yeah. Or like how the Helldivers 2 people started praising Joel and like speaking of Joel. For the listener, Helldivers 2 is a co-op shooter where you are fighting a war against bugs and robots that are encroaching on the Earth from either side of the galaxy. And this Battlefront, we recently found out, is being authored by like one guy called Joel. And
he's like the GM for the entire game.
Yeah, he's the GM of the whole game. And when players found this out, some of them started like talking about Joel as if he's a kind of deity. Like you see clips being shared on Reddit and people saying like Joel blessed this player and stuff, which is great. Are people playing Helldivers 2, James?
Irregularly. I think it's the kind of game where, yeah, I was saying that last week. It might get old faster than some other co-op shooters. So I don't know. There's the loop, the gameplay loop, as people like to say. It kind of feels like it gets samey faster than it does in like Dark Tide or Deep Rock, which like the two others I play the most. So I'm kind of like rationing myself almost, because I'm enjoying it definitely. But yeah, I don't want to get burned out on it too quick.
That's interesting to hear, because people, it was been, you know, as we sort of mentioned the other week, it's been growing week on week. So it's interesting that it might stop.
I mean, that's just like my personal feelings towards it.
Our entire job is our own personal feelings. It's fine. Let's not go back to the days of arguing for objective fact.
It's an Infinity. There's potential there.
Okay.
Just have to put up the crap with a weird tone. The other FPS preview I've played this week is the final season 2, which I think might actually be out by the time this episode releases. The concept for this is the finals, which is like in universe, is like a very realistic VR game show where people murder each other. It's been hacked. But the hackers are quite generous, it turns out. So they've given everyone like a load of hacking based tools and gadgets to play with.
Okay. And, yeah.
And these are like, these sound like a really small thing, like, oh, the grenade replacements, but they're really good fun. They really, like, I was surprised by the extent and regularity with which these upgrades, you know, like, change or, like, offer new ways to, like, play the finals. So one is, like, it deletes a section of wall or floor or ceiling.
Oh, that's fun!
Which, like, you can kind of do anyway with explosives, because, like, it's extremely destructible, but the class that can do this, like, typically doesn't have really many options for doing that. They have to rely on their friends to break walls for them.
What is a grenade but a life hack?
So yeah, now it's just a way of giving like that particular class a new way of either like escaping or breaking into like someone's, like, you know, breaking into a hard point. Or
I getcha, yeah.
One thing I like doing is because most modes are based around like physical objectives where you have to stand around a box or something. I like to delete the floor underneath the box so it falls through. like in the beginning of the Italian Job remake, and that basically, like, it either screws over the people defending it, because then they have to jump through the box as well, or if you're defending it and you do that on purpose, it gives you, like, I don't know, that you might put it into a more defensible position if you move it around a bit.
I see. Yeah.
That class also has like a quite funny ability to like transform like objects into different ones. So you can do it on just things that are lying around, like you can turn a bin into like an explosive canister or something. Or you can do it onto like enemy gadgets. So if they have, say, turrets and landmines around an objective, you can just like hack them to turn into plant pots.
Okay, I like that. That's sort of in the tradition of like polymorph and stuff like that. That's fun.
Yeah, so it's I really like these things because they are like hacking themes, so like they're in tune with the theme of the season, but they also fit really nicely into the whole thing about the finals, which is like remolding, reshaping the map as you play it because of all the like destructivity. Like you're not really supposed to just go through doors or like go through windows. You're very strongly encouraged to, you know, blow away entire walls and you know, make objectives move around. So it's kind of a way of like building on that, but also introducing like new and like kind of more science fiction-y like space magic ways of doing it, which I appreciate.
I love a destructible wall. Totally good. I've been playing not loads this week. I've been playing because I haven't done one for a while, so I've been playing Nancy Drew Message in a Haunted Mansion, which is the third Nancy Drew point and click adventure. It is bananas.
I keep forgetting those exist, and I'm always like pleasantly reminded when they do.
Listen, this one, she's in San Francisco and is helping to renovate a hotel or like turn a house into a B&B, and you know, there have been accidents and what have you. Mm. And like the woman who owns it just casually said, because I was asking about the history of the house, and she was like, oh, and there's an old timey bar in the basement. And I was like, okay, cool, normal. and it's a lot of like, very like you don't get like an objective, you know, like a log or any of that kind of shit, so you have to remember everything yourself. Oh, that's not true. You have like a notebook, but it's in your hotel case, in your hotel room, in your case, so you have to go upstairs, open your case, and then look at it, and it'll have some notes in there. But so I'm doing that. It's the weirdest one so far, but I'm kind of into it. I've been playing Chasing the Unseen, which I've not liked as much as I thought I would.
That's
which may be on me. Yeah, feels a little bit loosey-goosey, a little bit maybe like it's come out like a tiny bit too soon, but not like loads. It's quite a simple game in that you are in like a huge, weird kind of dreamscape landscape in a sort of sage grey void. And you'd run along like spindly rock formations and grab on to like big animals. So in the first couple of levels, which I've played, it's a big octopus. And I just find it very stressful, but I'm sort of not sure if it's... I think it might be... It's supposed to be stressful and unsettling, do you know what I mean? And I'm just maybe not in the right mindset for it. So I might come back to it in a few months when I'm like, you know, having a great time.
Yeah, that's fair. I guess when games are pretty minimalist and they do rely on you to kind of reflect a bit of yourself back into it.
Death of the author, mate.
See, I actually played this game at EGX last year, but I got immediately stuck because I was just on this like, I don't know what it was. It was almost like some kind of massive, colossal femur bone in the air.
Yeah.
Went all the way up one end of it. There didn't seem to be any way to proceed. Went all the way back down to the other end of it. There didn't seem to be any way to proceed. So I was just kind of like stood there. And eventually kind of just got up out of the seat and left quietly. But the thing was like the demo, when I went to start playing the demo, like that's where it had been left off by the previous person.
Oh, I see.
So
okay.
I think I suspect that may have been a recurring problem for that specific area.
Yeah, yeah. It is a little bit like that, but I have found that like you never are, maybe this, you know, they've revised this since the demo, but you're never actually really stuck when you think you're stuck. Like there's always a way to progress if you kind of look for it. So But it's just a bit like, because there's like a lot of freedom in like where you go and things, it's almost kind of too stressful. I'm at a point in my life when I need like rigid and simple rules, which is why I enjoy Power Wash Simulator.
Do you need yellow paint on the...
Exactly. I'm in yellow paint times. That's such a good term. I'm going to steal and use. Yeah, yellow paint mindset. That's what I've got right now. James, is it a good day to wear hard?
It is. It is indeed. And I'm going to get slightly more technical this week than I was with than I was with the Huey sponges and the exploding USB sticks. So technical, in fact, that I don't actually really understand how everything about this works. But it is potentially good news because basically there's a post on the NVIDIA developer blog, NVIDIA being makers of graphics cards, and that has described improvements being worked on to DirectX 12, which is the like rendering tool that most modern games use. This includes something called work graphs, which aren't actual like bar graphs. But work graphs, and I quote, provide a programming paradigm that enables the GPU to generate work for itself on the fly. So my understanding of this is that essentially a future version of DirectX 12 could allow the graphics card in your PC to perform tasks that are normally performed by the CPU and to perform them faster than the CPU could, which in turn improves games performance. Because like CPU bottlenecking is a thing. It's what happens when the central processor can't like crunch the numbers as quickly as the graphics card can when it's rendering games. And because so many calculations have to be run through the CPU, that in turn like essentially slows the whole system down. It's almost as if like a beans factory could produce 1,000 tins of beans every day, but the delivery cowboy's wagon could only carry 700 tins into the gulch. So in that case, the wagon is a bottleneck. This is the CPU is a bottleneck, or can be the bottleneck in a gaming PC. So these work graphs, and again, this is only according to the understanding of a non-computer scientist, work graphs could potentially avoid this bottlenecking by allowing the graphics card to do more of the work that the CPU normally does. Okay. Which I guess would be like attaching massive wagon wheels to the beans factory.
Excellent.
So it could just roll in all 1,000 tins at once. But yeah, it does like genuinely sound promising, because usually when you buy a new graphics card, there is a worry, I guess, of, oh, is my CPU going to hold it back? Do I need to upgrade that as well? Do I need to upgrade the motherboard as well? So if we can figure out a way to make games less reliant on having a fast CPU, that's obviously good, not just for people who have the budget and the enthusiasm to regularly update their graphics card, but also people who have very basic or old CPUs, because as long as their graphics card is decent, then the older model will be like more capable of playing new games, because the new games aren't as reliant on having a good CPU.
Yeah, I getcha. Oh, that's okay. So do you think this seems like a good thing?
But
do
how
impactful do you think this will be if it kind of works?
If it's a new version of DirectX 12 of DirectX, then it will probably take some time to be, you know, it'll be like implemented over time, like on a per game basis.
Okay,
it won't be like someone flicks a switch somewhere and then suddenly everyone's games run better. It's like direct storage. Like it'll have to be implemented on a per game basis. So it'll start off slowly, and then hopefully more and more games will do it. But just as a concept, it's good. It bodes well for the future.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's definitely like worth keeping an eye on.
Oh, well, thank you for bringing us good glad tidings, yeah. James.
It Lovely. Is a good day to wear hard.
It is! That is just about all we have time for on this Series 3, Episode 10 of the Electronic Wireless Show podcast. But before we leave you, we will give you, as we always do, some recommendations, because every week we recommend something that isn't a video game. James, what are you recommending this week?
This week I'm recommending Tenacious D's cover of Hit Me Baby One More Time from the Kung Fu Panda 4 soundtrack.
So specific. It's good?
It walks the line of being funny, but also like a genuinely good piece of music that you can listen to for just entertainment music's sake. I think parody music works best when it comes from a place of respect, where it's like an affectionate parody.
Okay, yeah.
And that comes through like very clearly on this. Like they're not making fun of Britney Spears. It's a enthusiastic cover of a good pop song. So yeah, it's a lot of fun. I'm probably still not going to go see Kung Fu Panda 2. Kung Fu Panda 4. But I like the song.
It's got Mr. Beast in it, hasn't it?
Does it?
Yeah, he's playing some... It's either a panda that looks like a pig. Yes, he does. He does. He plays a beast. It's like a pig that has panda markings, I think, or something. But I don't understand why you would... I know he's very popular, but like he deliberately does not have a personality, so I don't think he would lend himself to voice acting. Anyway, it's not the point, is it? I'm going to recommend a podcast by... They're called Tortoise Media, I think. They did Sweet Bobby, if you listen to that one. That was a good, terrifying podcast. It's called Who Trolled Amber? And it's about the Amber Heard Johnny Depp trial. I, at the time, was very, like, not involved in it, but I was like, well, it sounds like they're both awful. This is kind of additive stuff that kind of goes on top of, like, the sociological stuff that people like Princess Weeks on YouTube, she's a great YouTuber, talked about, or Michael Hobbs, a journalist, he's talked about the kind of social aspects of, like, why we kind of turned against Amber Heard. But this talks about the actual technical, like, troll farms and like the evidence of how much of it was whipped up by, you know, basically people that were paid to make it happen. There's a lot of evidence that suggests, so it's really, really interesting. It does come from basically a place of assumption that like Johnny Depp is a prick, so if that's the opposite to your stance, then I maybe go in with an open mind, I think it's very interesting and instructive and good, if depressing. So
has it affected your, I guess, your interpretation of the trial? Like, is it still a case of,
So like at the time when I wasn't really paying attention, that was my thing. And then I started paying a bit more attention when, you know, journalists and people who I kind of respect started talking about it. And I was like, oh, wow. Like when you kind of look into all the stuff that happened with it, like the jury wasn't seconded, which is mad to me when you're also allowing the trial to be televised. The fact that there was a trial in the UK where he sued the Sun for defamation, which he lost, and that judgment was not allowed to be admitted as evidence. And a lot of the evidence from that trial could not be admitted to this one. The judge like just threw it out. So it's a real like whoa kind of when you start looking into it, you can see how public opinion was shaped and brands getting involved within stuff. It's very depressing. That is my opinion now anyway, and so this I am already kind of primed to agree with this podcast, I guess. is the thing, but I do think it's interesting just in terms of thinking about how the in the modern age stuff can be influenced by that. I suppose one good thing about the downfall of Twitter now is that it's much harder for that to kind of happen on a coordinated basis because the site doesn't fucking work anymore, so.
Oh, they'll just go somewhere else.
Yeah, I'll go TikTok or whatever. I don't know. Anyway, so that's my recommendation. If you've got recommendations for us, you can email us podcast@rockpapershotgun.com. If there are any good Everton analyses or YouTubers that I should watch, get in touch so I can very quickly increase my knowledge base about football, for fuck's sake. Or if there are just other topics or news stories you'd like us to talk about, get in touch. You can follow Rock Paper Shotgun on the aforementioned dying social media sites, all of your favourites. Just search Rock Paper Shotgun and we'll probably pop up. You can join the Discord. The link's in the show notes where people chat about stuff. There's a good discussion about last week's episode along the lines of, like, all porn games are sex games, but not all sex games are porn games, which is fun. And, of course, for all of your PC gaming needs, just go to www.rockpapershotgun.com. But for now, it's goodbye from me. And it is goodbye from James.
Summer come louder, baby.
Oh, God!
You're welcome. Bye, everyone. Thank you.